Welcome to Burning River Baseball, and no jokes today because I'm fucking annoyed. That's how it goes. I am Joe Kublitz at Burning River BB. He's Justin Latta at Justin Latta. That's not it. Doesn't matter. I'm waiting to see if he corrects it, but he's not going to.
Moving on.
No, still not going. Still not going to. Okay, don't follow Justin.
Nope. Don't follow me.
I do not want to talk about Game 5. Let's just put that out there right now. It is currently, was it Monday night after Game 4? If you're listening to this after Game 5, then enjoy your little time capsule. If you're listening to it before Game 5, that was the idea. I'm going to assume at this moment that Corey Kluber is actually Corey Kluber in Game 5 and wins the game easily, and the Indians go on the ALCS. I really just want to talk about Game 4. We'd initially planned on doing this podcast Sunday night, and we moved it back a day because I was thinking, hey, maybe the Indians will win. We can do it after an Indians win. Knock this thing out. We'll talk about the ALCS and that's not going to happen.
Not yet.
So, yeah. That's what I say. I don't want to talk about Game 5 or the ALCS or any of that bullshit. I want to talk about what happened today. And I think there's a lot of little tiny bits. And I will say, for one thing, the worst game was Game 2, which they won. Kluber getting shelled like that, I didn't expect that at all.
Nobody did.
They came back and won, which was great, but they probably should have lost that game. And legitimately, they should have lost the game because Lindor would never have been up with the bases loaded if the play had been called correctly and Lonnie Chisenhall had struck out, which is what should have happened. And I think we need to be honest here, at least with some of this stuff, because I see a lot of people complaining about umpires, and I even, in the post-game report for Game 4, threw a little shade at umpires for the ninth inning. Because the first two batters were called out looking on pitches that were at least 2 inches off the plate. And it's like,
they did the same problem again today.
No, that's what I'm talking about today. The ninth inning. So I don't know when you thought Game 4 was, but that was like 10 minutes ago. I don't – like, they weren't going to score 4 runs, but the umpires also don't need to be calling those. And, yes, Aaron Judge also had a large strike zone. I think when you strike out 200 times a year, maybe your strike zone grows a little bit. Or also when you're, like, 6'11", your strike zone physically grows because you're really tall. I don't know. I was never 6'11", so I never had to deal with the strike zone like that. If you really want to know about my baseball experience, when I was playing, I was 5 foot, probably three, less than that, when I was a kid, 4 foot something, and I had no strike zone. And I would just stand up there. And one time, a umpire called a pitch that was up over my chest, and I was like, what are you doing? And he's like, you got to swing at something. You got to stand here all day. So I get it.
Because that's how it works, yeah.
No, but he was right. I was being an asshole. The point is, you cannot blame the umpires for what happened in this series. There are going to be calls that are off. And so many of these calls that people have been complaining about, it's not like the normal, like, oh, it was a full outside. It was like it was an inch outside, or it grazed the corner of the plate, and they called it a ball. And the next inning, it grazed the same corner of the plate, and they call it a strike. Consistency. How are you supposed to call that pitch if just a little tiny bit of the ball goes over the plate? Right? Officially, I think that's a strike, but, I mean, how are you supposed to call that consistently, over and over again? When it's coming 100, with Chapman, it's coming 104 miles an hour. With Severino, it's coming 100 miles an hour. With Salazar, was throwing 98 regularly during his inning. Like, how are you supposed to call that pitch right on the plate? You can't blame the umpires. Right? Justin's blaming the umpires. Silently.
I mean, we could really have a technology base strike zone that would, you know, fix all these problems. But, you know,
I don't know that it would. And I think Keith Law, was it Keith Law? Yeah, I think it was Keith Law in Smart Baseball talked about that and said that there's no reason to even implement one until it's 100% accurate, because right now they're like 85 to 90% accurate or something like that. So if you're going, let's say they're 95% accurate and you go to 97% accurate, it's not worth system for that.
No, I mean, plus if you know the strike zone is a strike zone, it's a strike zone, because it's, I mean, unless the computer, obviously technology fails, but.
Yeah, that's what you don't want to put it on
it's
that.
It's kind of stupid.
I mean, beside the fact that, like, what, are you going to put that in high schools and little league and shit? Like, when are you going to start that? In minor leagues? You're going to have minor league action umps and minors, and then in the majors, all of a sudden they go to robots. I mean, you got to have some sort of consistency there. It doesn't matter. That's a different subject. I want to say that the umpires had nothing to do with this series. Even the Lonnie Chisenhall hit by pitch / foul ball that was caught, foul tip caught for strike three. That play, I feel like the umpire called it correctly on the field for what he saw, just like when Encarnacion went back to second, was tagged out, and they challenged that play in that same game, in game seven. I feel like both those were called correctly on the field for what they saw. And then the challenge, then when you look at replay, they were wrong.
I don't know. We're wasting our time on umpire stuff because the Indians made four errors. So
yeah, okay. I mean,
the umpires can call whatever they want. You make four errors, you don't deserve to win, especially against a team like the Yankees.
That's the second guy I want to kind of – well, I was kind of going in order here and saying it's not the umpire's fault. And it's the second guy whose fault –
I mean, the strike zone was garbage, and it's been – I mean, you could even point to –
it was garbage. I think it was better than it was during the regular season. And it was close enough that if they were going to, you know, if you're going to get hits or walks or whatever, you still would have done it with the strike zone the way it was. I don't think it was that egregious. The second guy whose fault it was not that the Indians lost tonight and yesterday is Terry Francona. And I just got a tweet.
Terry Francona right now.
I just got a tweet. Because somebody said... He said, I love Tito. He's the best, but if we lose, this loss is partly on him and blah, blah, blah. And I said, in the end, it isn't really. It's on the players on the field because he could position them better, but not four runs better. And
not four errors said, better. The player's got to make the play.
Yeah, okay. Well, and then he said back to me, wait, aren't you usually someone who's critical of him? So I'm going to answer that right now. I'm not – I wouldn't say I'm all that critical of Francona. There are things that he's done that I didn't like, and there's things that he's done that I loved. I think he's the greatest manager in Indians history, so obviously I'm not that critical of him. I don't think managers have a real legitimate effect on the play on the field beyond a part where if a guy foul tips the ball into the glove, you should probably challenge that play. Like, so sometimes there are points when it's important, but you know, in individual instances and in putting the best players on the field to have the best performance. But in the end, it's up to the players. And if Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez, who were two of the best hitters position, Francisco Lindor was the best hitting shortstop in baseball this year. Jose Ramirez was the best hitting third baseman in baseball this year. And those two guys can't come through at all for an entire fucking series. That is not on Terry Francona.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot blame Terry Francona.
You're not going to bench him. Yeah. You can't move him in the lineup.
Well, and look at what he's been given here with his lineup. I think his lineup is not the most efficient way to put those guys on the field. But you've got Lonnie Chisenhall, who was hurt most of the last 2 months of the season and never really came back hitting. You've got Michael Brantley, who was hurt all of the last 2 months of the season and played like two at-bats before the postseason, and now he's a starting DH. You've got Encarnacion, who's out and can't play at all. You've got Jason Kipnis, who was hurt most of the last half, and he did play well once he came back the last 2 weeks of the year. But then you asked him to play center field. So, like, you've got all these back at the last moment. They did play a lot of scrub squads coming at the end of the season, so their numbers looked better. Like Giovanni Urshela's numbers offensively looked decent the last month of the season because he was playing against the White Sox and the Twins and the Royals and you know, like those teams that you can beat 22 times in a row. You know, and Yan Gomes' numbers look great at the end of the season. And it's the same reason, I think, because they were playing against those teams. And Encarnacion and Ramirez, they both crushed the ball against those scrub squads coming up at the end of the year. Now, that's not to say that you could take anything away from those guys necessarily because it's not like they had the option of playing better teams and they chose to play the weak teams. That's just how the schedule worked out. So they beat the teams they were supposed to beat, so that's fine. They scored runs against the teams they were supposed to score runs against. But that doesn't mean you can expect Urshela to continue hitting when in 2016, Urshela was considered such a bad player, he didn't play a single major league game the entire season. September call-up. He didn't come up when someone got hurt. He never came up for the entire season in 2016. And in 2017, he's the starting third baseman. He is not a different player. He's the exact same player he was last year. And in 2016, I was calling for him to be called up constantly. I said, he needs to be on this team. He needs to be a utility infielder. He needs to be a defensive replacement. And now he's a starter. And I'm saying, he needs to be a defensive replacement. He needs to be a utility man. I believe I've stayed consistent on this. No,
it hasn't really made a difference. I mean, okay, number one, he's not going to – I would really not expect him to have as bad defensive game in game five as he did today, obviously.
We're not talking about game five.
No, I'm saying I don't think you're ever going to see a game like that from Urshela. And number one, the first ball hit to him. He normally does catch, but it was –
What did you start with? If this is number one, what did you start with?
What do you mean?
You said something. You said you made a point, and then you said and number one. So was the first point number two?
Made two errors. That's what I'm talking about.
Never mind. Keep going.
I don't think he's going to have as bad a defensive game as he had tonight on Wednesday, or possibly ever again in his career. That was really my only point.
Okay, so you only have one point.
I guess.
That's fine. And if you're listening to this and thinking, wow, he's way too happy to have just watched that game, I took some happy juice. Our sponsor, the Kraken.
And the first ball hit to Urshela the first time. I mean, I don't really know if you can call that an error because it was hit, I don't know how miles an hour.
And the same thing with the 1-2 Carlos Santana that hit off his forearm. No?
Late in the game. I agree. Yeah,
Santana had a two-base error late in the game. I think both of those are really hard hit balls. And
the thing is, you
can throw away errors, but they still were plays that probably both of them were plays that should have been made.
Right. And those are both, I mean, that's unrealistic or unrealistic. Those are two plays that those guys make. I mean, I would say 8 times out of 10, even though they're hard hit balls this year, both those guys make that play.
Yeah. And it's always talked about, and I can't remember the actual game of it. It was so long ago at this point, but there was a game Omar Vizquel committed like 3 or 4 errors in the same game. And if you're listening to this now and never watched Omar play, you're like, no, that never happened. But it did. It happened early. I think it was early in his career, like maybe 95, 96 somewhere. It's in books and shit. And they always talk about like he burned his glove and went out and got a new brand new glove for the next game. And whatever. So it happens. Like the best defender ever can make multiple errors in a game. And it obviously was not Ursula's game. And I do not think Urshela will make those mistakes again. And my complaints about Urshela remain not about Urshela. Anytime I complain about Urshela, it has nothing to do with Urshela. it's all about the fact that I don't think Jason Kipnis should be playing center field. That's on Francona, I think. And it's, I went back and forth a little bit with Matt Bretz yesterday, I think it was, from Wahoo's on First. We've talked about it over the last month or so because I agree with him on a lot of things. And one of them is this particular – he's always, it's funny because he's always been for putting Carlos Santana in the outfield, and he was against Kipnis in the outfield. Today, my only thinking was maybe Jose Ramirez just doesn't want to play third base. And maybe that's it. Because it's really hard to argue that the Indians aren't better with Ramirez at third, Kipnis at second, and let's say Austin Jackson in center field if you're going to have Chisholm left. Than with Kipnis in center, Ramirez at second, and Ursula at third. Because if you have that, then you're essentially saying, okay, Ursula's going to get out every single time up. These pitchers that the Yankees are throwing are no joke. They are all real. We talk about the Indians being the best pitching staff ever. The Yankees' bullpen this year was like the second best bullpen in baseball history. So they're there. And Severino throws 100 miles an hour. And Tanaka has a split finger fastball, I guess you call it, that I've never seen any pitch move like that. It's insane. He's right-handed, and it moves from left to right. It just doesn't – the pitch doesn't make sense. It looks like a backward slider. These are really good pitchers that the Indians are facing right now. So to stick Ursula out there against those guys.
There's people who believe that are better than the Astros just because of their bullpen and their ability to hit home runs. And it's not as if they're playing. I mean, yes, they're playing the wild card team, but the wild card team is kind of a bad way to look at that. Like I saw someone yesterday say the Indians gave up two home runs in the series to a 200 hitter, which was done on Greg Bird. People are looking at like just, you know, the baseline stats, and they're not considering what they're seeing. Like, yeah, Greg Bird hit 200 in the regular season, but if you knew anything, he was hurt all year, and then he came back late in the year for ankle surgery and was great at the end of the year. So thinking of these guys, the way their final season stats look or something, like, or because the wild card team is a horrible way to look at it. They're playing.
All right, I was complimenting their pitching staff, but Judge, who has struck out almost every single at bat this postseason somehow, except for one big double in game four, he led all offensive players in WAR this year. He had 52 home runs. You've got Sanchez, who is easily the best offensive catcher in baseball. And I didn't realize it until I looked it up recently. He's actually third in defensive run saved. And I think that's because of the physical plays on balls in play. He's obviously not good at pass balls or wild pitches. He's worse in the league at that. But he's been really good at balls in play, they're put on the field. So he's actually a pretty decent defensive catcher too. So there's an argument that Sanchez is a top catcher in the AL. Bird's okay. You know, like I'm not going to go crazy over him. Gregorius is a fantastic player all around on both sides of the ball. They really do have, they have a good team. I don't think they're better than the Astros. I think that's a reach. But
I'm not saying that's true, but I'm saying there's people who believe that.
And I don't think they're better than the Indians by any means, except that at the moment they're way healthier.
That's probably a key point to point out.
You know, I mean, think about Brantley. Brantley had a great whatever it was 10 games last year he played, he was fantastic. This year, he was fantastic until he got hurt at the end of the season and missed most of the last month or so. He was really doing great. This was Lonnie Chisenhall's best season ever. And you lose Chisenhall, you lose Brantley, you lose Kipnis. They're on the field, but they are not playing like they usually do. So now you're really requiring Santana. He's been the one consistent hitter every game in, game out for the Indians. But you're requiring Santana, Lindor, and Ramirez to really carry you.
Mm-hmm.
And other than the Grand Slam, which was gigantic, and if it wasn't for that Grand Slam of Lindor's, then this series would be over, and we could be talking about the AFL or something right now.
Yeah. So he come back in the game too.
Yeah, you can't discount Lindor at all, but I mean, they've still been mostly absent in New York. I like CC Sabathia. Okay, I guess we're talking about Game 5 now. But CC was surprisingly good in Game 2. I couldn't believe that. I thought that they were just going to destroy him. I don't believe that they're going to get beaten by CC Sabathia twice. And I'm talking about he pitched well enough that he should have won in Game 2. I don't think that they're going to let that happen twice.
I mean, possibly, but like you said, I mean, Jay Bruce had two big hits, three big hits in Game 1. He had another hit tonight, so Jay Bruce has been all right. But
Jay Bruce has been fine, and Encarnacion, was he okay before he got hurt? Yeah.
No, all he did was walk. He didn't get a hit. He got one hit.
So yeah, that's fine, though.
He didn't do enough to really say one way or the other. I mean, it's unfortunately, because of, like you said, the health of Chisholm and Brantley, although, and then Edwin, I guess Brantley's forced into more pressing action because of Edwin's health.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the offensive issues fall on Lindor and Ramirez. I mean, they're combined.
Yeah, I think I've seen people
3-39.
Yeah, I've seen people complain like Yandy Diaz isn't on the roster. You really think Yandy Diaz is going to fucking hit Chapman? I mean, come on. Maybe. No,
I mean, maybe, but
maybe
he
makes contact. But I mean, he's not a major leaguer who's been around for 10 years like these other guys. He is not. If Gomes can't hit Chapman, then Yandy Diaz can't hit Chapman. Yandy Diaz is not the hitter that Yan Gomes is. I don't care what his batting average has been over the last 3 years. Yan Gomes is a major league hitter, and he's solid. Like, he can hit anybody, and he can't hit Chapman. Diaz ain't hit Chapman.
I would say the best thing you're going to hope for with Diaz is to work a walk because of his plate discipline, but unfortunately he's too passive at times, you know, in the strike zone. So I think that creates an issue. Again, and Diaz in this roster is not going to – I'm sorry, he doesn't change a 1-0 game last night. He doesn't change tonight.
Yeah.
Diaz does not make up for – I mean, maybe he doesn't make the errors or shell makes. I don't know.
No,
even though we know
that's a silly – the first Ursula error
– shouldn't be an error, right.
Could have been made by anybody. So, like you could say that, buddy, just because of what happened, you know, it was coming so hard and it hit off of him and whatever. It happens. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. The second one, I think Jose Ramirez makes that play really easily because I think Jose Ramirez is looking first. Ursula's problem is that he looked to second and he really should have just tagged the runner. And that's something that's always bugged me since I was in Little League. And it bugged me because I made that mistake once when I was playing second base. I didn't tag a runner. And then I like actually got out of the runner's way and threw to first base. It stuck with me to this day. It was like, why did I should have just tagged him and then the inning would have been over. Instead, I got out of his way and threw to first. But no, he should have tagged the runner out going to third. That's always – and Adrian Beltre does that a lot where he'll tag the runner going to third instead of trying to throw across the infield. Because that's the easy play. If you tag a guy out, then it's over. You don't have to worry about making an error on a throw. You just get the out, and it's easy. So he should have looked there first, and then if that wasn't there, thrown to first. But instead he looked to second first, and Ramirez was kind of walking towards that direction, but he wasn't going to get there in time. And so he threw the first and made Santana jump a bit. There were four errors, but there may have been six or seven. Well, let's see. You had Bruce had a bad throw to the infield that allowed a runner to advance. Perez had a pass ball on a ball that hit him in the glove and bounced past him.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't in the dirt. It was. It was like right there, and it bounced over his glove. You had Kipnis throwing in from center field and allowing a guy to tag up from a slow guy to tag up from third base from a short fly to center field. There were at least 7 or 8 plays that probably could have been better. If they make all of them, they probably win. But I don't know that. Whatever.
I'm also going to take the moment to, because I want to enjoy something about this. I mean, the first two games were great, obviously, and last night was a great game, even though the Indians lost 1-0.
Game two sucked. I liked game three better than game two. I really think that the Indians played much better in game three than game two. Yeah, they came. They came back, but
I'm gonna take a moment to enjoy a victory lap and say that the person everybody was worried the most about this series has been huge for them.
Are you talking about Josh Tomlin? Because
I'm talking about Josh Tomlin.
Because I was gonna say, if you want me to say I'm wrong about something,
I think I'm wrong. I think, you know,
I was wrong about Josh Tomlin.
I defended the decision to have Bauer go in game one. Keeping on short, you know, having him available in short rest for game four tonight, which I don't think he pitched that badly in.
And Bauer, and again, I guess if we were going to continue our thing, it's not the ump's fault. It's not Francona's fault. It is not Bauer's fault at all.
It's not. But also, I wouldn't have hated the decision to start Josh Tomlin and gone to Bauer out of the bullpen had things gone bad for Tomlin.
I think, honestly. Seeing what happened in this game and how every pitcher pitched, I would have liked to see them start Salazar. I think Salazar is the Indians' third best pitcher, and I've always said that. Well, I've said he's in second or first best at times, but I've always said he's at least a top three pitcher on this staff. I would have liked to see Salazar start this game with Bauer in the bullpen. I don't know that the results would have been any different because those hits they got off Bauer, the first one was a ball that literally hit the chalk down the left field line. And it's like,
what can you do?
How do you avoid that? Like, there's nothing you can do about that. Then there was a legitimate hit to right field. So that's a real hit. That's, you know, it's going to be what it is. And then there was a seeing a single up the middle. And it's like, you can't do anything about that. That's the type of hit that Cody Allen gives up a lot, or Corey Kluber give up.
And Brian you can't Shaw. Do anything.
Yeah. And you can't do anything about those hits. They happen. They squeak through the infield going 10 miles an hour. And they are what they are, so you just live with it.
And I think it's important to include in context Bauer's start that Aaron Hicks did not get called on a. I mean, I know we're not blaming the umpires, but it's important to view in his start that wasn't that Aaron Hicks swung, didn't get the call. That should have been out number three, and then that was the same inning where Shaw got hit in the leg with the ball.
Yeah, I'm not going to fight over that check swings call like many people wanted to.
I mean, it was. I think it was. I don't want to say it's blatant, but I think it was pretty close. They could. I don't know. Can you review those?
No, I don't think it's a challengeable play.
Maybe one day. That's pretty. It's getting pretty granular. If you're.
There was one later in the game on an Indians hitter, and I can't remember who exactly it was, where the Indians hitter check swung. The umpire at home called it a strike, and the hitter pointed to first base and. The first baseman, I was like, no, it's a strike because he already called it.
Right, they're not going to over-trump another umpire.
Yeah, and it made me think of the AZL games because in the AZL games, a lot of times the home plate umpire will call a check swing and the manager of the team that gets it called against them will jump out of the dugout and be like, hey, you can ask for help on that. Teach the umpires at a young level, like, if you can call it at home, call it at home, because in the low levels of the minors, they don't have – umpires at every base. They only have one umpire, so usually he's at first base. So you're talking about a right-hander check swinging. There's nobody at third base to go check that with, you know, so you have to make the call on your own. But so a right-hander check swings and you're asking the guy at first base good or not, and how is he going to see it any better than you could? So I feel like, yeah, that's fine with me if the home plate umpire calls it. But maybe that's just from watching ACL games that I don't care if in the majors even.
The third base umpire could in this situation.
Yeah, I feel like they're asleep half the time anyway.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine. I mean, you don't want to split hairs over it, I guess. But that's the same inning where Urshela got hit with a line drive, and then that wasn't called. And then I don't know. I'm gonna go back to the fact that I think that it might have been a better decision to have Bauer into the bullpen in this case and go with Tomlin. I think the weirdest thing about this, and this is, I think this, you know, in a 2-2 series so far, it's not over, so you can't really say anything blew up. But the one decision that hasn't really is definitively gone the wrong way for Francona is Clevinger in the bullpen has not been good in his limited action.
It's been irrelevant, though.
Has it, though? I mean, he did get the two-run homer in Cleveland, and then he got hit tonight.
Yeah, but it's been irrelevant because they won that game in Cleveland, and they lost tonight, but they would have lost anyway.
True, but I mean,
so it's been like the worst decision to me has been Kipnis in center, and him making that diving catch. And I swear, people are only looking in every aspect of their lives. People only look for something that proves they were right.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many people prior to the series starting that were hating on me and Matt Bretz, because I think me and Matt Bretz are the only two people that were against Kipnis playing center field. Because a lot of people, I mean, I remember people talking about they wanted Kipnis to play in the outfield 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So if somebody comes out and says, hey, I wanted Kipnis in the outfield 3 years ago, they were probably right. They probably did say that because I saw it all over the place back then. People wanted Ramirez, at least by 2016, people wanted Ramirez to play second and Kipnis to move in the outfield. So it's been around for a while. But so many people, anytime I said anything about it, to the point where I stopped talking about it. And when we had to write an article about Kipnis moving to center field, I had Gavin write it, Gavin Potter, because he doesn't have very many Twitter followers. But I had Gavin write it because I felt like I'd already said my piece and people had given me so much shit about it. I was like, I don't want to talk about this anymore. Like, obviously, I'm against it. I don't want Kipnis in center. I think he should play second base. And the people who – like, what I really don't get is the number one response I saw back from me saying Kipnis shouldn't be playing center field because he's never done it before was that, well, the Indians infield has won 22 straight games with Ursula at third base and Ramirez at second. And well, they went to the playoffs three times with Kipnis playing second. They won the Central Division twice with Kipnis playing second. So who gives a shit about 22 games? I don't care if they won 22 in a row. Kipnis has been playing second since 2011. Forever. Like, why are you – like, if you're going to say this should be this because of, you know, it's been going for so long, then look a lot further back than 22 fucking games. It has really been since 2011. Kipnis has been the starting second baseman. I like that. It blows my mind that these people like are so short-sighted that they look, oh, Ursula has to play third base because they won 22 straight. Who gives a fuck? Like, he was hitting home runs, and that was the reason they were winning. Like Kipnis hasn't been exactly a league-average defender since 2011, and he has. And I've looked at his numbers so many times, and I've written 10 articles about Kipnis playing defense at second base. I know exactly what Kipnis's defensive numbers are at second base better than anyone else because I look at him all the time. And he makes every single play that a second baseman is supposed to make, and he makes no plays that a really good second baseman makes. I'm aware.
I don't really know where that decision's cost them in that series. I mean...
Oh, there's been two plays. I mean, literally, it's two plays. He's made one really good play in center field, and he's missed two plays. It's really not that important.
The ball important, he broke in on the other day, and then the sack fly tonight.
Yeah, that was it.
Okay, but those are both irrelevant, too, because you just said the Clevinger thing
exactly
was irrelevant, so those were irrelevant, too.
The relevant point is that Austin Jackson sat on the bench all night tonight. And... not that I'm a gigantic Austin Jackson fan, but when you have another bat that you think maybe I can get into this game, it sucks to leave that bat on the bench when you got Ursula in there and you know Ursula's never going to get a hit. He is not going to get a hit. And that, again, this is going back to what we were talking about before. The Yankees pitching staff is too good. A guy, a triple-A hitter, is not going to get a legitimate hit. He might get a little squib infield hit, like Squeak went through, like Hicks did, or whatever we were talking about before. He might get a little thing like that. Ursula is not going to get a double against a Yankees pitcher. There is not a Yankees pitcher shitty enough to give up a double to Giovanni Ursula.
Probably not.
And so he shouldn't be. So he should not be playing in these games. And if you move it over, then you've got Jackson playing in center, and you're already saying center field defense doesn't matter by putting Kipnis out there. And you've got Chisenhall playing left and Bruce playing right, and maybe one of those guys will actually get that double. That's where the difference is. That's the only difference, is you're talking about maybe one of those guys will get that hit.
What about – this probably makes no – I mean, well, Chisenhall hasn't exactly inspired confidence in his swings either, so that's
– no. But he's better than Ursula.
Yes, I agree. And if they really want to protect defense on the infield by starting Ursula in the postseason, when I guess they really think Brantley's going to make a difference, but I don't know why the first move after Edwin went down was to put Brantley at DH when
instead of Kipnis.
Instead of Kipnis, why not DH Kipnis
and put
Jackson in center, and then you can still have your way putting Urshela at third base for defense.
Yeah, that makes sense too. I didn't even thought about that, but that does make sense.
I mean, that.
But honestly, Kipnis
is that in the lineup, was it not?
But Kipnis hasn't really hit in the ALDS anyway. So I mean, like, at a point
coming in tonight, it was the most on the team.
Okay. Well.
It's not much, but I'm just saying he had four hits coming in tonight, which was the most.
And again, this brings it back to the point that it's not Terry Francona's fault at all.
Mm-mm.
Because it's up to the players on the field. And it's up to – it's not just – I mean, Santana hit a home run tonight, so you could say he did his job. And he played pretty well against Tanaka when everybody else was going down flailing.
Santana did great against Tanaka. He was the only one. He had a hit and a walk.
Yeah, so you can't put it on Santana.
In any of the games.
But I would say you could put it on every single other player in that lineup.
I won't.
They didn't pull their weight.
I don't think I'm going to blame Jay Bruce for much.
Oh, okay, fine. So you pick seven guys. There's seven other guys in the lineup that have to score some fucking runs. You cannot go two straight games without scoring runs.
I mean, the Indians' two best hitters, not named Encarnacion, are 3 for 39.
Yeah, that's the issue. It has nothing to do with Francona. It has nothing to do with the hitting coach as much as I went back and forth with the hitting coach a couple of years ago. I think it was 2015 when we really got into it. And my problem with the hitting coach was that Santana was struggling. And I said, well, if Santana struggles and the hitting coach can't fix it, then it's the hitting coach's fault because Santana's a great hitter. So if he can't fix it, then they need to get a new hitting coach in there that, you know, can fix this problem, because that's the only thing that the hitting coach should be doing is fixing problems. He's not going out there and hitting. He should be out there fixing. But it's not his fault at this point. Like, I mean, there's against major league pitchers, they're not only a playoff team, but they're second consecutive year playoff team. They have to be able to do this. They have to do it on their own. And there's no firing the coaching staff. There's no firing the manager. It really is on the players themselves to get it done. And that's it. Hopefully they come through in game five so we can keep going.
I mean, I hate to say it. And obviously Lindor's grand slam saved them in game two. But overall, the reason this is a 2-2 series is, okay, number one, it's a 2-2 series because of Lindor's grand slam, but it's also a 2-2 series, and it's going to a game five because both Lindor and Ramirez have struggled to put the ball in play. Lindor hit the home run.
And shitty at bats. Like, right before Lindor hit that home run, he had a really terrible at bat where he struck out on a pitch in the dirt.
Both of them are
trying to – and I feel like –
I don't think it's a stretch to say this. You can look at their at bats. both of them are trying to get the ball in the air. They're both trying to hit home runs. They both.
Yeah, that's why I really feel like they're both swinging and missing way more than they would in the regular season.
Ramirez
and maybe
has
okay, eight strikeouts. So maybe put that on the hitting coach. But yeah, they're both swinging a lot more than they would in the regular season. They're very patient hitters generally.
Somebody on Twitter pointed this out that you know everyone can talk about how the Indians have handled Aaron Judge and he had a double tonight. And that was his first hit in the whole series. He's got four walks and you know I think he came into the night with eight strikeouts and 10 official at bats. And four walks. Well, that's great. I mean, you kept Aaron Judge from beating you. Other guys have beaten you, obviously, Gary Sanchez and whatever, and, you know, Greg Friggin Bird. But it doesn't matter how if you stop Aaron Judge because they have other guys in the lineup that can beat you. The Yankees have stopped Jose Ramirez. They've stopped Francisco Lindor aside from one at bat, and that's how they're beating them. The Indians don't have other guys in the lineup that can do
that. The Indians, when they won 22 straight, it was really a 1-9 type of thing. And they were getting big hits from guys like Ursula and Gomes and Perez and those other guys. And Perez obviously hit a home run in game four. They were getting home. And Jackson, they were getting huge hits from Jackson all over the place. And Bruce. And it was every single guy in the lineup was hitting. If every single guy in the lineup hits and you got Corey Kluber going on the mound, there is no way the Indians ever lose. It is only when the entire thing breaks down that the Indians are even remotely beatable. And that's why I think they'll win game five.
But that's the only way the Indians are capable of winning is if everybody in the lineup does their job.
No, I don't think so. I think they can – Kluber can pitch a shutout any day. This postseason has been very odd in that, like, Severino went 100 pitches, and it was like, wow, a starting pitcher reached 100 pitches? Like, that's crazy.
A Bauer didn't go 100.
I think he might be the first in the series.
I think he's the first in the playoffs.
Yeah, I haven't watched the rest of the playoffs that much, but he's the first in the Indians Yankees series to hit 100 pitches, and it was so weird. It was like, wow, he's actually going to hit 100 pitches and go past it because who cares? Like the next time he's going to pitch, assuming if the Yankees win Game 5, will be ALCS Game like 2 or 3. Like they'll put Sonny Gray out there for game one. So they would probably go Gray, Tanaka, and then Severino. So he's not going to pitch until game three of the ALCS. So why not throw 120 pitches?
If he's still going
But it was so weird to see somebody pitch that many pitches because we've been seeing, well, this guy's struggling a little bit. Let's pull him immediately and go to the next guy. At least we won't see that with Kluber, I don't think. They gotta ride Kluber until he's dead.
Yeah, I mean he's not gonna. He's pitching Game 5, so.
Yeah, I mean, you killed Clevenger, Salazar, Bauer, and Tomlin are all gone. You can't touch him.
I don't think. Unfortunately, Clevenger's probably not gone. They will probably still think that Clevenger is able to give them something.
I think they'll be willing to go with Shaw, Olsen. Oh, I guess they have a day off in between too, so you have a day off to listen to this. But
you can bet you won't see Tomlin. You can probably bet you won't see Salazar. I don't think they trust Salazar, even though I didn't think he pitched that bad tonight. I mean, he was a little erratic with his command, but that's just, you know, Salazar.
I love Danny Salazar.
I thought he was fine tonight. I mean, like I said, he walked guys, but I thought he did good. He stuck to the game plan, and when he missed the way out of the strike zone.
Until next year to start fighting for Danny Salazar again, though.
I guess.
Because obviously I fought for him last year in the World Series. I wanted to see him start a game in the World Series last year. And
so it didn't happen, but whatever. I thought bringing Smith in early was weird, but that's probably where they would have brought
him. Why they did that, and I explained it in the post-game report, the written on burningriverbaseball.com. The reason why they brought Smith in, which they never talked about on the FS1, was because it takes Danny Salazar and Mike Clevenger 20 minutes to warm up. You know, like, you can't just go, oh shit, Bauer sucks, let's bring in this starter to pitch the next 5 innings. And Francona has always done that. Whenever a guy goes out in the first or second inning, he always brings in either Otero or someone like Otero first because he knows that guy can get up at three pitches. He's good to come in. And Smith was like that. It was like three pitches. Smith is good to come in, finish the inning, and then he goes on to the starters after that. So right. I expected that. I did not expect them to bring in Salazar. A lot of people were saying, well, what's the point of Salazar being on the roster if he's not in the second inning?
I think they only pitched him out of necessity tonight. I don't think you'll see him again. And obviously you won't see him in game five. I don't know what his role will be in the next series. You can't get away with the same. If they're lucky enough to move on, they can't go with the same plan next round.
He was good enough. Well, and what really sucks is I do feel, and we talked about this last week, that I feel like Francona set this rotation up to win in four games and have Kluber pitch game one of the ALCS. Well, you fucked that up, didn't you? Like, you had to go with your loyalty. You had to go with the guys that you wanted to go with, and now Kluber is going to have to pitch game five, and you're going to miss him. Try to set him up for the first game of the World Series, I guess.
That still puts Carrasco for game one of the ALCS if they get there, which is fine. Because then if Carrasco goes game one, I mean, we're talking way ahead. They may not even win game five. You never know. The offense may not show up, so we can't guarantee that. But if you win game five, if Carrasco goes game one, Kluber goes game three, you still have the ability to go have those guys both pitch twice in a seven-game series. I think the only mistake, and it's a five-game series, so it's a lot harder. You can guarantee you're going to pitch Kluber twice if it goes five. The only other thing you could have done was ask Carrasco to go on 3 days rest, which I don't think is a great idea.
No, I think starting Salazar would have been in there. But, of course, Salazar being hurt the later half of the season really killed that too.
The piggyback of Tomlin and Salazar would have been interesting just because of their contrasting styles.
Yeah, and I think they may do that next round if they go on. And I honestly don't have a problem talking about the ALCS because I don't give a shit about the ALDS. I've seen so many ALDSs from 95 through 2001, except for 2000, they were in the ALDS. They were in there in 2007. They were in there in 2016. They played in it. I don't care about it. Like, to me, you should look past it. You should be trying to win the World Series. Like, that should be the ultimate goal. So
that's what everybody's criticizing Francona for. It sounds like he's managing this series like he's already won, and he's
I definitely think he went it like they already had it, and maybe that was the right move. I mean, like, let's say, whatever. This is running to the end, but if it's kind of like this has been a kind of recurring theme, I feel like, on the podcast, at least, that we've talked about with the Indians, where you get pushed to your limit, and when you really like go all out, like, we have to win this game right now, we have to win this one, and you do win it, then you don't have anything left over for the next game. And we talked about it last year with the winning streak and this year with the winning streak. And you could talk about with the Diamondbacks maybe winning the wild card and then losing to the Dodgers in the first two games. The third game isn't going on right now, so we can't really talk about that. They lost the first two games to the Dodgers. And they played pretty well against the Dodgers going down the stretch. But, you know, like, you hit that limit, and then it's like you got nothing left to go on. I feel like that's kind of what Francona was setting up for the ALDS. It was like, no, let's not hit our limit in the ALDS. Let's burn by the Yankees, the Astros, or whoever happened to make it in the ALCS, and let's make sure we're going full bore for that World Series. Because if you have to play to the limit in the ALDS, and then you have to play the limit in the ALCS, is losing the World Series that much better than losing in the ALCS or losing in the ALDS? You still lost. Who gives a shit?
Right. You know, like fake Billy Bean said, or who is it?
I don't know. Fake Billy Bean.
Brad Pitt. Nobody gives a shit unless you win the last game of the season.
Yeah, that's the basic thing. And so I don't. I'm never gonna fault Francona. Terry Francona is the greatest manager in Indians history. I've read enough about Lou Boudreaux to say that. On my top 10 list, I still don't have him in the top 10 because he hasn't won a World Series. He wins a World Series, he's there. He is number one if he wins the World Series, but he has to win the World Series first.
Okay, I hate to look at it this way because, I mean, ideally the Indians would have Kluber go 7, Miller 8, Allen 9, win the game. So if Kluber has to come out early, if there's a, you know, if the same issue comes up, what is their contingency plan? Because
I'm pretty sure we aren't. I'm pretty sure I said we weren't going to talk about Game 5.
Well, I'm talking about it, so you can choose not to, and I can have a conversation myself. I can have a monologue, or you can just listen. Or
I'm going to kneel on your goddamn Game 5 talk.
if Kluber's out early in Game 5, the same damn thing happens. Where do they go? Because I'm sure they'll bring Clevinger back because they think that he's a bullpen option. I think for if they get to the ALCS, they're better off starting him. What do they do? I don't think they're going to bring Salazar back. I guess it's Tomlin, I would guess, is the long option.
Brian Shaw, 6 innings.
I'm okay with it. I know you give him a Yankee Stadium home run tonight, but
I honestly, like, Francona is so funny sometimes. We really do have to end this. Francona will do some funny things, like sometimes he'll pull a guy in, like, the first or second inning. I'm talking about mostly regular season at this point. And he'll bring in a reliever, and I'm like, okay, well, he's going to bring that other star. He's going to bring in Sean Marimondo or Ryan Merritt or somebody in to replace him next inning. And then he doesn't, and then he doesn't, and then he doesn't. And he just keeps going reliever after reliever after reliever, and he makes it to the ninth inning somehow, pitching guys an inning and a third. He usually doesn't go much more than an inning and a third. Maybe he pitches a guy 2 innings. But it's so funny
Otero how he or Goody or Miller goes to.
Yeah, it's so funny how he can stretch out a bullpen like that. And I feel like no matter what happens, he can stretch it out. But I also feel like Kluber's got to give up like 5 runs in the first inning for them to really pull him early. They're going to ride him.
Probably.
They're going to ride him.
But is and that I the feel right like, call? Don't if it gets out of hand early, do you just?
Yes. You read it because I've seen Kluber pitch 200 times or however many starts he's made. I've seen Kluber pitch. He has given up runs in the first inning, especially against teams like Kansas City. And, you know, those teams that swing first don't take any pitches at all. He's given up 2 or 3 runs in the first against teams like that. The Yankees aren't a team like that. But, you know, he has that potential of giving up 2 or 3 runs in the first. And I've seen him give up 2 or 3 runs in the first and then pitch 6 or 7 innings. You know, like, he can keep going. I think you got to ride him. I think I just had a flashback to CeCe Sabathia. There was a game against Toronto. It must have been a decade ago because he's been traded almost that long, where CeCe Sabathia gave up home runs to the first 2 hitters of the game, and then I think he stuck around for 6 innings and didn't give up another run. And that's perfect. Because CeCe Sabathia is facing off against Corey Kluber. And you can follow Jensen Lewis for all your stupid stats.
Oh, good Lord. How about the one tonight from ESPN while we're on that subject?
I saw it.
Oh, my God. The Indians it doesn't matter. From August 24th to October 7th at 35-4. And the Indians from October 8th and 9th are 0-2, like arbitrary. Oh, here's another thing I want to point out before we're done too, because this is really pissing me off tonight. Sorry, this is going to be the bunch of rants. I don't care.
You're gonna beg for my Yankees rape joke next week.
Oh, God. Maybe if they beat them, I don't care. You can make whatever joke you want if they beat them. someone tweeted at me earlier about how. The only thing the Indians learned how to do from last year was choke a series away. And he was referring to the obviously blowing a 3-1 lead with the Cubs in the World Series. And I said, well, that's kind of weird because if I recall, they didn't blow a 2-0 lead to Boston in the Division Series. And they were up 3-0 on Toronto, lost game 4 with Kluber on 3 days rest. Because they didn't hit, because I think Aaron Sanchez pitched that game and kicked their ass, but and they won game 5 with Ryan Merrick starting. So those are series clinching games. But they said, well, they're 0-5 in their last five series clinching games. I mean, I have a really big problem with people cherry picking arbitrary dates. Like, you can't sit here and tell me that, oh, well, they lost their last five elimination games because they lost three in a row to the Cubs last year, and they lost their first elimination game in this postseason. Number one, why does what they did against the Cubs in the last World Series matter? Like, it has zero bearing on this postseason. The only thing that has any bearing, and very little, because I think Francona is one of the best at this, is making his players turn the page, is forgetting yesterday's game. But in reality, the only real game that would make a difference is the game the night before, not winning game three in a closeout game. So how do you sit there and tell me, well, they lost their last three to the Cubs and they lost last night? Okay, well, they didn't lose their last one to the Blue Jays. They didn't lose their last one to Boston. They closed those series out, but those had nothing to do with this either. So people, you can sit there and say they're choking or they can't close out a series, but you're just picking arbitrary end dates. You're not proving anything. None of that stuff proves anything. Whatever happened in 2016 has zero bearing on this year. They have to play the game, game five on Wednesday. They had to play the game tonight. Whatever happened then doesn't matter. Tyler Naquin's not out there to drop a ball in center field.
No,
that's Ursula and Kipnis' job now. So,
hey,
I really have a problem with these people saying, well, they have a problem closing out the series because they didn't have a problem closing out the series against Boston and Toronto, but then you want to overlook that and say, well, they didn't close out the last night. They didn't close it out against the Cubs.
A lot of this has to do with that bullshit clutch narrative and all that in postseason experience, which I feel like we talked about last week, what postseason experience actually means. But it's all whatever. It's a baseball team playing against another baseball team, and any baseball team could beat any other baseball team any night. A sweep is rare, even during the regular season. Like, even the best team against the worst team in the regular season, a lot of times you only win 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4. You don't sweep the series because it's very difficult to do. There's so much randomness in baseball, and we saw that randomness against Bauer. Like, in the early innings, that's what happened, was randomness killed Bauer.
Right, everyone's sitting there bitching about how he didn't pitch great. No, I thought Bauer pitched great.
And randomness kills Bauer a lot because he walks too many guys. He doesn't strike out as many guys as Kluber or Salazar. And, you know, so he gives up weak contact. Like, he's not necessarily Tomlin, but he's getting off there by giving up weak contact. So he is going to get burned by batting average on balls in play from time to time. It is what it is. So it happens and we moved on. Any team can win any day. You hope that the best team wins. And right now, I think that the Indians are the best team, and I think they're going to win tomorrow or Wednesday or whenever you listen to this.
Probably tomorrow because you're listening to this tomorrow morning. So yeah.
I'm not going to tell them when they're listening to this. They might be listening to this in the year 2025.
God, I hope not. This would be really
awesome. Because Justin is going to be a super famous celebrity, and everyone's going to be like looking back and looking at his podcast and be like, oh my God, he said that? We can't possibly vote for him for president anymore because he said that awful thing.
I can't even run for president in 2025, so I'm not that old.
Well, there's not going to be a presidential election in 2025, so I think we're okay.
This is probably true. We're stuck with the next 40 years with Trump as our dictator.
God damn it. I can't believe – see, now you're fired. That's it. You're never going to make it anywhere. That's it. Do we have a song we can play out to? Justin has never sang a song on this show for us.
No, I don't have anything.
He's blowing it. He doesn't even have his favorite boy bands in tow.
Here, I got something for you.
Oh, no. Oh, well, you're actually going to play a song or you're going to sing it?
I'm actually going to play it.
Will the people listening be able to hear it?
I don't know. Can you hear it?
Not right now.
Guess not. Okay. Well.
I was an Indian's Fever, because that's always my go-to.
No, no. It was something Trevor Bauer would warm up to.
Oh, yeah, I'm not into that. I just thought of a song I really shouldn't sing on air. I never want to work anywhere ever. Yeah, I probably shouldn't do that even after two crackets. All I can ever think of is Run and Fez. You put him out with the satellite's gone way up to Mars. Soon it will be filled with parking cars.
All right, well, tune in next week, because it could be the first episode of the off season, or we could be talking about the first two games of the ALCS.
Find out. Listen to the radio.